This is Audible.
Come Back for Me. Written by Corinne Michaels, narrated by Andy Arndt and Zachary Weber. Chapter 1. Connor.
Airwood, wake the fuck up.
Someone punches my arm and I shoot out of my seat. My eyes dart around for whatever danger is present, but only find my buddy Liam next to me on the plane.
Man, you sure like to talk in your sleep.
I rub my hand over my face, trying to clear the cobwebs.
I have no idea what I was dreaming about. A woman.
Great. God only knows what I said.
Doubtful.
Dude, you were totally talking in your sleep. His voice goes higher.
Oh, Connor, you're so sexy. Yes, give it to me like that.
Then he returns his voice to normal. I'm just saying that she was very animated. I know exactly what I was dreaming of. An angel. A beautiful woman with dark brown hair and the bluest eyes I'd ever seen. It doesn't matter that I spent one night with her 8 years ago. I remember her perfectly. The way she smiled and crooked her finger at me to follow. How my legs moved without my brain ever giving them permission. It was as if she were sent from above to save me. The night my father had gotten so drunk he sucker punched me as I walked out the door for boot camp, promising never to return. She was perfect, and I don't even know her name. I elbow him, knowing there isn't a chance in hell I'm about to confess any of that.
Thank God you're married. No woman would be stupid enough to ever go for you now. Your impressions suck, and you're an asshole.
He grins, no doubt thinking of his wife. Some guys have it all. Liam Dempsey is one of them. He has a beautiful woman to come home to, kids, friends, and he had one of those picture-perfect childhoods. Basically, his life is the opposite of mine. Only things I have that are worth a damn are my brother's.
What are you talking about? There's a reason they call me Dreamboat and call you Arrow. I'm a goddamn dream.
Here we fucking go. They call me that because of my last name, asshole. Liam chuckles and shrugs.
Maybe, but mine is because of my glowing personality.
Even though he's a total idiot, I'm going to miss him. I'm going to miss all of my team. I hate that this was my last deployment and I won't be part of this brotherhood anymore. I've loved being a SEAL.
Thankfully, you're so vain that I will see your glow anywhere I end up. Any idea where that's going to be or what you're going to do now?
Liam asks. I lean back in the much too uncomfortable chair of this C-5 plane and push out a deep breath.
Not a clue. Glad to see you're on top of your life. You need to get your shit together, Arrowwood. Life isn't going to hand you shit.
Liam has been my team leader for the last two deployments and is like a big brother to me. But right now, I'd like not to be lectured. I have three older brothers who do enough of that as it is. Although I guess that's what the SEAL team is. Brothers. Brothers who would do anything for each other, including help the other through a big transition, even if it's one that's been coming for a while. 3 years ago, I was on deployment. It was a routine checkpoint, and my leg was crushed when a car tried to run through. I had a few surgeries, all looked good, but I'm not healing right. This deployment, I was on light duty, which was basically admin. I fucking hate admin. I wanted to be out there making sure my brothers were safe. Then the doc gave me the news that I'm going to be medically discharged. I'm no longer fit to be a SEAL. And if I can't do this, then I don't want any part of it. I have plans.
Like?
He asks. Kicking your ass, for one.
You could try, young buck, but I wouldn't put money on it.
If my leg were 100%, Liam shakes his head.
I'd still kill you. But all kidding aside, you can't sign the papers in 2 weeks and have no idea what to do.
My oldest brother, Declan, was up my ass and saying the same thing when I called him a month ago. Deck runs a huge corporation in New York City and said he was looking for a new head of security, but I'd rather ram my bad leg through a meat processor than work for him. He's a hothead who knows everything, and he doesn't pay shit. I've already done 8 years of that, so I'd like an upgrade in the financial department. Still, he has a point. I can only survive on what little savings I have for so long, then I'll need to get a job.
I'll figure it out, I tell him. Why not go back home to the farm? My eyes narrow and I bite back the anger that fills me at the mention of that place. Because the only way I'll step foot on that land is if I'm burying the man who resides there. The Arrowwood brothers made a vow to take care of each other, protect one another, and that was what each of us did until I could get out. 2 weeks after graduation was the last time I touched that farmland in Pennsylvania. I'll live on the streets before I go back there. He puts his hands up. All right, brother, no need to look like you're about to slice me open. I get it. No going home. I'm just worried. I've seen a lot of guys get out and struggle to navigate civilian life. As much as we bitch about this life, it becomes us, you know? He's right. Hell, I've seen it too. But I wasn't ready for getting out to be my reality. I would have done 20 years with a smile because the Navy saved my life. I was going to end up in jail if I hadn't enlisted. Then when I was in, I got selected for buds and refused to ever be anything else. Now it isn't my choice. I'm not sure what else I could even be at this point. My buddy Jackson has a company that takes broken SEALs. I'm sure he has room for one more. I flip him off. I'll show you broken. Before we can get any further into a spat, the officers come around, letting us know we're preparing for landing and how they want the offload to go. Homecomings are like nothing anyone can comprehend. They are filled with emotions, balloons, fanfare, tears of happiness, and a lot of excitement. The wives are dressed up and the kids look perfect and polished when we know that their lives the last 9 months were anything but. You can see the families so ready for a glimpse of their loved one, they would climb on top of each other. Then there is how we feel. Our nerves are different. We are ready to get home and see the people we love, but at the same time, we know that it won't be easy. Loving a man who is preparing to leave again can't be easy. It's why I'm grateful that love and marriage were never high up on my priority list. I like knowing that there is no sacrifice made in order to love me. The commander falls quiet, waiting for everyone's attention. Patterson and Caldwell will go first since they had babies while we were gone. Then it'll be alphabetical to deplane. Once you've checked out with me, grab your gear and don't report back to base for 2 weeks, understand? Aye. We all answer in unison. He puts the clipboard down and eyes us all. Don't make me have to explain to my wife why I have to leave home to come bail one of you idiots out. A few of us laugh, but he isn't, because it may have happened 2 deployments ago. Thankfully, it wasn't me. The plane touches down, and I swear I can feel the energy shift. Since it's alphabetical, I'll be one of the first off, but our team is filled with guys who have kids. I'll wait until they're off, take the ass-chewing from Commander Hansen, and go on my merry way the same as the other single guys do. Commander calls my name, but I stay rooted. His voice rises again.
Arrowwood.
He glares at me, but I shrug.
Jesus, every damn deployment you morons do this. Fine, I'll call your name twice, and if you don't get up, you're moved to the back of the line. Idiots. And I'm surrounded by them.
See you in a few weeks, Liam says as his name is called. I'll be sure to say goodbye. He slaps me on the chest.
You do that.
After the rest of the names are called, I hear mine again. Commander doesn't look at all happy, but I see the hint of pride hidden behind his scowl.
You're a good man.
Those kids want their fathers. He nods.
Here's your paperwork. I'll see you back in 14 days.
I nod, take the paper, and head off. The sun is shining and the air smells clean. There's no dust or dirt clinging to my skin as I walk down the stairs.
Yo, douchebag.
I freeze for a second before turning to face my brother, who isn't supposed to be here.
Sean?
He walks toward me, arms open and a huge smile on his lips.
Good to see you home in one piece.
We give each other a hug, slamming our hands on each other's backs.
What the hell are you doing here? I figured someone should see you home from your last deployment.
Well, it's good to see you. I say with a smile.
It's good to see you too, little brother.
I may be the youngest, but I'm not little. Sean is the shortest out of us, but he has the biggest heart. I sometimes wish I was more like him. You know, I can slice you from ass to cheek in about 10 seconds. You really want to spar? He slaps me on the shoulder. Not today. I'm here for something else. Yeah? Yeah. We have to go meet Declan and Jacob. A sliver of worry fills me. We don't exactly have family reunions. In fact, I think the last time the four of us were together was the day I graduated from boot camp. My brothers and I are all 1 year apart going down the line. My poor mother had four kids in 4 years and then spent the next 7 years raising four boys who weren't known for being easy kids. We banded together and were best friends in all things mischievous. Now, though, we're all scattered like the wind and only see each other separately for the most part. Meet them where? Sean clenches his jaw and then releases a heavy sigh. Sugarloaf, our father is dead. It's time to go home. Chapter 2. And now that's over, Declan says as he stares down at the hole in the ground where the casket rests. The graveyard is old, with a few headstones that are still broken from the bonfire night where we were all idiots. It's quiet, and the smell of farming fills the air. A bit of manure, a bit of smoke, and a lot of regrets. I thought I would feel better now that he's dead, but all I feel is anger. Not completely, Sean reminds us. We still have to figure out what to do with the farm and the land. Burn it, I say without feeling. Being back here makes me itch. Even with him dead, I still feel as if he's watching, judging, and preparing to raise his fists. Hell, it still feels as if the secrets we've kept because of him are trying to choke me. Connor has a point, although it would make me feel better if the old man were still in it when we set it on fire. Jacob tacks on. I agree. My father used to be a good man. He loved his boys, his wife, and his farm, giving everything he was to each one. Then my mother died, and we lost both parents. Gone was the kind, fun, and hardworking man who taught me how to ride a bike and fish. Instead, he became a hollow drunk who used his fist to speak his rage. And boy, was he angry. At everyone, at everything. Mostly at my brothers and me, for reminding him of the woman he loved and God took away too soon. As if we weren't grieving the loss of the most wonderful mother who ever drew breath. Dex shakes his head. This is the only thing the bastard left us, and it's worth millions. It's also where Mom's ashes are scattered. We're going to be patient, like we've been, and sell it. Unless one of you wants it? Hell no. I don't want a damn thing to do with it. I want it out of my life so I never have to come back to Sugarloaf again. Everyone else grunts in agreement. Well, we're all going to have to meet with the lawyer sometime this week, and then we sell the fucking thing. I have no doubts Deck has already pulled strings to get us the hell out of here as quick as possible. Just like the rest of us, he has a lot he wants to avoid in this town, which won't be possible if we're here more than a day. The four of us pile into Sean's car and head back to the house, but as soon as we get to the entrance, the car stops. The wooden pillars with the sign overhead and our last name burned into the wood is aged, but still standing strong. I try not to remember my mother's voice, but the memory comes too strong and too fast, and I'm 8 years old again.
Now, what is one truth about an arrow?
I groan as her brow lifts and she waits for the answer.
Mom, the new Nintendo game is at home and I want to play.
Then you best answer me, Connor. What is one truth about an arrow?
I saved money for my last birthday, but it wasn't enough, so I had to borrow money from Jacob for the game. He's so mean, he made me do his chores for 6 months, but now I have the new Mario. All I want to do is play. I don't care about the arrow. She puts the car in park and crosses her arms. Mom used to be my favorite.
Why do we have to say this each time?
I ask. Because it's important. Family is what matters in this life. Without that, you have nothing. When we cross this threshold, we're back home. We're with those who love us, and this, my sweet boy, is where you will always belong.
My mama is the best person I know, and as much as I want my Nintendo game, and I really want it, I want to make her happy more.
I like making Mama happy. You can't take a shot until you break your bow.
I grumble, hating that this is one fact she makes me recite. She smiles.
That's right. And why is that important?
Mama!
I whine because the game is calling me.
Don't mom me,
she tisks.
Why is it important? Because if you don't break the bow, you'll never go forward, and an arrow is meant to forge ahead.
Her eyes fill with love and happiness as she stares over at me.
That's right, and you were meant to go places. Now let's go to the house to see if your brothers have left it standing.
And I get to play my game.
Mom laughs.
Yes, and that, after your chores.
I can't do it, Sean admits as he stares at the dirt driveway. One by one, my brothers left this place, and each of them took shifts coming back until I was old enough to leave as well. They protected me in a way I couldn't appreciate at the time. Jacob delayed going to college by a year to make sure Sean could play ball, and I wasn't alone with Dad as much. Sean would take me to games, making sure I got out of the house once in a while after Jacob left. Declan went to college but spent his summers back at the farm, ensuring he could shield me from Dad's fists whenever possible. He looks the most uncomfortable, but he's also the strongest willed of us all.
What is one truth about an arrow?
Deck chokes the words out, and I close my eyes.
Mom, what would she think of us now? Would she understand why we all left this place? Did she see the hell he put us through and what we became because of his choices?
Jacob answers.
Removing half the feather will make the arrow curve and alter its course, which is why sticking together matters.
Mom would be disappointed in us,
Declan says.
No women, no kids, nothing but jobs.
We have each other, I pipe up. We always have, and she would have wanted that.
Declan stares out the window.
She would have wanted us to have more.
Yeah, well, it's hard to have more when you grow up the way we did.
Jacob's voice is quiet and full of sadness.
We made a pact. No marriages, no kids, and never raise our fists in anger. She would have understood. She would have wanted us to stand by each other and be nothing like he was in the end.
Maybe she would. God knows that's what we hoped for.
I like to believe that if she's watching, she has seen it all and would understand that her boys made this choice for a reason. I had her the least amount of time, but I think she would have respected the desire to protect others. If we came from a man like that, surely it was inside us too.
Declan looks at Sean, the brother who was by far the closest to her. He has never forgiven himself for the night she died.
Drive, brother. It's time to go forward.
Sean slams his hand on the steering wheel before putting the car in drive and slowly accelerating down the path to hell. None of us speak. I know that I can't gather a thought long enough to say a word. There are memories everywhere. The fence that lines the driveway where my brothers and I would sit and watch the cows, dreaming about running away. I spot the tree that's on the left side of the property where we made a ladder with scraps of wood so we could climb into the branches, pretending we were hidden and safe. Dad could never reach us up there. He was always too drunk to get up more than two of the rungs. Over to the right is the archery course where my brothers and I spent hours imagining we were Robin Hood or other great men who did right. I can hear the four of us arguing over who shot better, all the while knowing it was Sean. The bastard always had the best form and aim. And then what once was my home comes into view.
It's like a fucking time warp.
Deck comments. Nothing has changed. He's right. The house is exactly the same as it was when I left. It has two stories and a big wraparound porch with a swing. The white paint is faded and chipping, and the black shutters are missing on one of the windows and hanging off another. While it may be the same structurally, it's not the home the four of us remember. I clear my throat.
Only now it's a damn mess.
I don't think the old man did a damn thing after we left,
one of my brothers says from behind me. There's no way we'll sell this house for what it's worth. Although the house has never been the prize, the land has been. Over 300 acres of some of the best cattle land in Pennsylvania. A winding brook flows through it. The grass is premium for the cows, and it's picturesque. How could he? Declan snorts. He didn't have his workhorses to tend to things while he was drunk off his ass. I nod, feeling a new type of anger toward him. At least he could have cared about the farm. What about the animals? Sean asks. We'll need to do a full inventory and see what the hell we're walking into. I speak up. My brothers agree, so we divvy up the tasks. It's time to see what else he destroyed. The farm is a mess. That's all I keep saying to myself. It's a nightmare. He hadn't maintained a single thing other than the dairy equipment, which he would have had to keep up and running if he wanted to make enough money to buy his liquor. Still, the fact that he let the land go is unbelievable. What could have been a 10 million plus inheritance is worth half that at best. It's going to take a hell of a lot of work to get it close to what we'd want to sell it for. I'm walking in the field out to the left of the creek, the place that I would come to hide. The first time my father drank himself into a rage, I was 10, and Declan took the beating, shielding all of us and telling us to run and hide. I didn't fully understand what had happened, just that my brother, who I loved, was screaming for me to go. So I did. I ran. I ran so hard that I wasn't sure I'd ever stop. I ran until my lungs struggled to get air. I didn't stop until I was where I thought no one could ever find me because Declan had something in his eyes I had never seen. Fear. I'm standing here, on the edge of the creek, looking up at the platform I built in the tree where I spent so many days and nights hiding from the hell that was in my house. What a fucking mess. Being here is the last place I want to be, but there's nothing I have to hide from anymore. I'm no longer that scared little boy, and there are no monsters hiding in the house. Yet, I can't help but feel the pit in my stomach. The quiet is almost loud as I stand here listening to the creek that used to lull me to sleep. The farmland is beautiful. I can't help but see the lush greens and deep pink hue of the setting sun in the sky, illuminating the clouds and making them look like cotton candy. I close my eyes, lifting my face to the sky, hearing the sound of my breathing. And then a thump from above causes my senses to kick in. I look around, trying to see what it was. Then a sniffle. Hello? I call out, turning to the tree and the platform high in its branches. There's a scuffle, the sound of feet shuffling on the wood. Someone is up there. It has to be a kid because a grown adult wouldn't be hiding up on that platform. However, whoever it is doesn't answer. Hello? I know you're up there. I say a little softer because I'm trying to be less scary. You don't have to be afraid. Another bit of movement and then a cry that is clearly in pain. I don't wait. I move up the tree, using the wood steps my brothers helped me build so I would always be able to come here. I'm coming up. Don't be scared. I instruct, not wanting whoever is up there to fall off the scrap of wood. I make it to the platform, and a little girl is huddled in the corner. Her eyes are wide and full of fear. She doesn't seem much older than I was the first time I headed up here, but I'm not really around kids much, so I have no clue how old she really is. I do know all about the apprehension and the tears running down her face. I used to wear a similar expression in this spot. I won't hurt you. Are you okay? I heard you cry. She nods quickly. Okay, are you hurt? A tear falls down her cheek and she nods again, clutching her arm. Is it your arm? I ask, knowing that's what it is. When she still doesn't speak, I try to remember what it felt like to be hurt and alone, hiding in a tree. I'm Connor, and I used to live here. This was my favorite place on the whole farm. What's your name? Her lip trembles, and she seems to wrestle with whether she can answer me. In the end, her green eyes watch me like a hawk as she clamps her lips tight, letting me know she has no intention of speaking to me. I take another step up the ladder and lean on the platform. It's okay, you don't have to tell me. I'll stay up here for as long as it takes to get her down. She sits up, her brown hair falling around her face. and she sniffs before pushing it back.
You're a stranger,
the little girl says. I am. You're right not to talk to strangers. Would it help if I told you that I was also a sort of police officer in the Navy? Her eyes narrow, assessing me.
Police officers have uniforms.
I grin, smart kid. That's right, I wore one, but I'm not working now since I'm on the farm. Can you tell me how you hurt your arm?
I fell.
How'd you climb up here? She shifts a bit.
I didn't want anyone to find me.
My gut tightens as a million answers as to why this little girl is hiding up here with her arm in pain instead of running home for help. I have to keep myself under control and remember not everyone has a shitty home life. It could be anything. Why not? She worries her bottom lip.
Daddy said I wasn't supposed to leave the house and I didn't want him to be angry.
Then she wipes her nose with her arm and another tear falls.
I came here so I could wait for Mommy to come home.
I give her a knowing nod. Well, I'm sure your daddy is worried about you. We should get you back home and get your arm looked at.
He's going to be so mad.
Her lip quivers. Poor thing is terrified. Of her father or because she broke the rules, I'm not sure. I don't know who she is or who her father is, but she can't stay up here injured and scared. She'll fall. How about I don't tell him where I found you if he doesn't ask? She eyes me curiously.
You mean lie?
No, I just think that friends keep secrets, and we're friends now, right?
I guess so.
Well, friend, you know my name is Connor, but I still don't know yours. Her lips purse.
I'm Hadley.
It's nice to meet you, Hadley. Can I help you down since your arm is hurt? Hadley's head bobs quickly. I instruct her how to get close, and then she wraps her arm around my neck, holding on tightly as I get us both down without jostling her too much. When we get to the ground, I set her on her feet and squat. We're eye to eye, and there's something about the way she looks at me. As though I'm her savior, that makes my heart ache. Is your arm okay?
It hurts.
Her voice is small and holds a quiet tremor of pain. She moves it across the front of her body, cradling it closely. Can I look at it? Hadley is a tiny thing. Although I have no frame of reference on how old she is, if this is a normal height for a kid or I'm an idiot.
Okay.
I take a look and there's some bruising and it's swollen, but nothing glaringly obvious that she broke it. Well, it doesn't look terrible, but I think we need to get you home so they can make sure it's not broken. Where do you live? She points across the creek to where the Walcott farm is. Is your last name Walcott?
Yep.
I smile. It's good to know they didn't sell off their farm. The Walcotts were good people. My mother and Mrs. Walcott were close friends. When Mom died, Jeannie would bring us food and make sure we still had pie every now and then. I loved her and was sad when she passed. Tim died about a month after her, and my father would say it was from a broken heart. I wish my father loved my mother enough to go die alongside her, but I wasn't that lucky. I had no idea if someone bought it or if the property was passed down to someone. They never had kids of their own, but it seems it's still in the family. I'll walk you home and make sure you don't get hurt again. Do you want to cut across or would you rather I drive you? I see her worry, but there's no way I'm letting this kid go off on her own when she's hurt.
We can walk.
All right. I stand, put my hand out, and smile when she takes it, knowing I earned a little of her trust. We make our way to her house, neither of us saying much, but then I feel her start to tremble. I can remember all too well not wanting to go home because my parents were going to be mad at me. Too many times I had the wooden spoon to my hide because my mother said to be back before dark and I'd wandered off, lost in the vast lands that looked the same, and one of my brothers had to come find me. How long have you lived here? I ask, wanting to take her attention off her impending punishment.
I grew up here.
Yeah? And how old are you?
I'm 7.
She must have moved in right after I left. You live here with your parents?
My daddy runs the farm with my mommy. She's also a teacher.
They sound like nice folks. Hadley looks away, and that feeling niggles at me again. I've lived my entire life based on trusting my instincts. In the military, it's kill or be killed. I had to rely on myself to know when something was a threat or not. Something about her demeanor has red flags going up all over.
My parents probably aren't home, so you won't meet them.
I nod as though I don't see through what she's doing. I grew up making excuses as to all the reasons my friends couldn't come or my teachers shouldn't call. My father was sleeping, he wasn't home, he was on the tractor, or he was out of town. Anything I could say to deter someone from seeing anything. From finding a reason to ask questions. Hiding wasn't just for me, it was for everything about me. Well, if they're not, I'll at least know you got home safely.
Do you think I can come over sometime to climb your tree? It has steps and mine doesn't.
I grin at her. Anytime, kid. My tree is your tree. And if you come by in the next few days, I can show you two other hiding spots my brothers and I built.
Really? Cool.
Hadley lights up. Really? We get toward the drive and there's someone at the car. Her dark brown hair falls down her back in waves and she's lifting a paper bag from her trunk. When she turns, our eyes meet and my heart stops. Her lips part as the groceries tumble to the ground, forgotten as I come face to face with the woman who has haunted my dreams. My angel has returned, only she isn't mine.
Chapter 3. Ellie. It can't be. This can't be happening. It's been 8 years since that night. 8 years of pretending that it was all a dream because it had to be. I never saw him again. No matter how many days and nights I scanned crowds or looked at every driver, it was never him. Partially, I was grateful because that night was one of the most heartbreaking and incredible nights of my life. I never should have given myself to him. But I was so unsure of where my life was going and if marrying Kevin was the right thing to do. I only knew that I needed to be loved and cherished, even if it was only for one night. I wanted to be held the way that this man held me when we danced. The other part was the agony, because I was getting married the next day, and God help me, I prayed that I would never see him again so I could find a way to forgive myself for the sins I committed. I should have known that I couldn't ever atone for my sins to be forgiven, and him being here is proof of that.
Mommy!
Hadley rushes over, her eyes filled with terror at the groceries on the ground. Shit. I let them fall. I hate that she worries so much. It's okay, baby, I'll get them. Hadley turns to the man when she sees my eyes go back to him.
Connor, this is my mom.
Connor. I'd given him so many names, but Connor is fitting. The name is strong, like the man. Time has done nothing to lessen how attractive he is. His eyes are a deep emerald green that makes me feel like I'm drifting. His hair is longer up top, pushed over to the side, giving him a bit of a boyish look, but it only adds to his appeal. Then there's his body. God, his body is sinful. His shirt is clinging to his arms, and there's no denying the muscles beneath it. His chest is broader than I remember, and I remember everything. His touch, his scent, the sound of his voice as he made love to me in a way I didn't know existed. I needed him and the memory of that night more than he can ever know. I've relived it so many times, clinging to those feelings that I was desperate for, loving how my world came alive and colors were brighter when I was with him. He was like a comet that set the sky on fire, and the tale has never faded for me. But now, him being here, it threatens everything, including the life of the little girl he's standing next to. I look to both of them as I crouch to try to pick up the stuff I dropped. And how do you two know each other? He heads over as well, bending to help gather the items that are out of my reach.
I found Hadley in a tree, and I think her arm is pretty messed up. I wanted to make sure she got home okay.
Immediately, my attention shifts to her. I don't know how she heard it, or if someone hurt her. Are you okay? What happened? She looks to him and then back to me.
I fell.
I close my eyes, willing that to be the truth. Kevin may hurt me, but he's never raised his hand to Hadley. Let me see. She tugs up her sleeve, and I touch the bruise marring her skin and hate that it looks swollen. I need to get her checked out. Connor lifts the bag of food into his arms and hands it over. Can I help? I shake my head quickly. No, I've got it all. My husband is working on the farm. I'll get this inside and then take her. Thank you. I can't let Kevin see him. It will send him into a million questions about who he is, how I know him, why Hadley wasn't in the house where she was supposed to be, and what happened to her arm. Right now, my emotions are too unsettled to deal with any of it.
Are you sure?
Very. Connor gives a sad smile and then touches the top of Hadley's head.
You be careful, all right?
Hadley smiles up at him. You too. He laughs.
I'm not the one who is hurt.
You should still be careful because you're a soldier. That's why I haven't seen him. He's been gone, but clearly he's back. Only I don't know what that means or if it means anything at all. I don't even know why I care what that means. I have my life here with Kevin and Hadley. We can't leave, even if we wanted to. Kevin ensured that when he moved me here, away from anyone I might know. Still, my lips part, and I find myself asking, "You're in the military?"
I am, for another few weeks at least. Then I'll be out.
I nod, thankful that he'll be leaving again. Well, thank you for bringing Hadley home. He takes a step closer, making my pulse spike. It takes every ounce of strength I have to stand my ground.
You're welcome.
My insides battle over telling him my name. I don't want to lie, but giving him this is like relinquishing all the false pretenses. But I owe him. I owe him so much, so I stop fighting myself and tell him the truth. Ellie. Connor takes another step closer, his deep voice brushing over me as he says my name far more beautiful than I've ever heard it.
Ellie. You're welcome, and it was nice to meet you.
I smile tentatively. Yes, same, Connor. Saying his name feels like a piece of the puzzle fitting together. Hadley takes my open hand, and we walk up the steps that lead to the falling down house we call home, leaving him standing there and watching us. And I wonder if he could see what I've been ignoring for the last 7 years, that Hadley has his eyes.
It's not broken, but it is sprained, Dr. Langford says as he checks her arm. Second sprain in the last 2 months.
Yes, she's so full of life and loves to run and climb. I can't keep her feet on the ground. Dr. Langford nods.
I had a little one like that, always covered in bruises and scrapes. It's also the farm life. Explains why you've had a bit of bad luck too, huh?
I nod. I hate the lies. I hate all of it, but I'm so afraid. I know, and I have to leave because, while there's a fraction of truth that Hadley is rambunctious and always climbing, I'm not home all the time and I don't trust Kevin. She swears it's the fall, and I've never seen him physical with her. But can I really trust a man who is willing to unleash his anger on his wife, not to do it to a child? I would leave this very instant if I had a place to go, but I don't. My parents died the week before I married Kevin, and I have no money, no help. No family to take us in. When I leave him, it has to be planned. That was why taking the teaching job was necessary.
Now you need to be more careful and stop climbing while your arm heals.
Hadley smiles. I will. I made a new friend.
You did?
His name is Connor. He owns the farm next to us. The doctor's eyes widen.
Connor Arrowwood?
She shrugs. He said he was in the Navy and a police officer. He carried me with one arm.
I've known the Arrowwood boys for a long time. Good kids. Had a rough time once their mother died.
Of course he's an Arrowwood. It didn't occur to me that he must be if he was on the farm next door. I have lived here 8 years, and the only time any of them were mentioned was when someone told me they haven't stepped foot in this town in almost a decade. How long ago was that? I ask. Dr. Langford looks up, seeming to ponder.
Had to be when Connor was about 8. It was a shame. Cancer came and took her fast. They must have come back because their father passed.
Yes, I felt bad that I missed the funeral. He nods.
I wasn't there either, but I wasn't a big fan of him. When his wife passed, it changed him. Anyway,
Makes sense the boys would come to bury him and sell off the farm.
Sell it? I ask.
He shrugs and then starts to fit Hadley with a sling.
Sure. They won't stay around here long, even if their father is gone.
He gives me a look that tells me that the rough time they had after their mother died was more than grief, and then continues.
Still, you made a good friend, Hadley. I always liked Connor.
She grins, clearly agreeing with the doctor's assessment, and a part of my fear breaks away. If he won't be around, then I don't have to worry. He'll sell it off, go back to wherever he's living, and I can avoid any disruption in my plan to get away from here. Now that I know his name, though, I can set things right once I'm away from here, find out for sure if Hadley is his.
All right, Peanut, you're all set. Remember what I said about climbing and taking it easy until you're all healed. No horsing around too much.
I promise, Hadley says with false promise. That kid doesn't know how to be careful.
Good. Now can you give your mama and me a few minutes to talk? I think Mrs. Mueller has some lollipops out there.
He doesn't need to say anything else. She's gone.
How are you feeling?
He asks with a fatherly tone.
I'm good. Ellie, I'm not trying to pry, but you've got a pretty ugly bruise on your arm here.
I pull my sleeve down, hating that it rode up enough for him to see the marks. I hit the wall when I was getting all the supplies for the classroom out. I've always bruised easily. And I've gotten really good at avoiding medical attention. The last time Kevin gripped my wrist, causing it to pop out of the joint, I set it myself and splinted it. Then, when he tripped me and my ankle sprained, I wore a brace for a month and tried to ignore the pain. There was no way I could go to the emergency room, so I'd found ways to hide injuries. However, if he saw my side, he'd never believe that her fall, which I'm not even sure was a fall, was innocent, and that would be the last I saw of her. I can't let anyone take her away. I will protect her better. I'll do what I have to do to make sure we're gone in the next 2 months. I need time and provisions. His eyes study me, and I can see that he isn't buying it.
No judgment here. I want to help.
Help with what? Kevin owns the farm, the car, the bank account, and I have nothing. Kevin is controlling, and when things don't go his way, he loses it. When we go, we have to end up so far away that he won't be able to find us, no matter how hard he looks. And he will look. He'll want his daughter, and he will never let me go. I attempt to give him my warmest smile. There's nothing wrong, Dr. Langford. I promise. He sighs, deducing that I won't say anything more. There is nothing that anyone can do to help.
All right. Well, I'll see you back soon. Take care, and don't hesitate to call if you need anything.
I promise, I'll do that. He leaves, and then Hadley comes running back into the room with a pocket full of lollipops and a smile on her face. She heads straight to me, wrapping her arms around my middle, causing me to wince.
Sorry, Mommy, I forgot you had a bruise.
I always have bruises. It's okay, baby.
Did Daddy get mad again?
Hadley's eyes brim with concern.
He shouldn't hurt you like that.
God, this can't be the life I show her. It was an accident, I lie. I'm okay. She shakes her head.
I don't like that you have another bruise.
Me either. And that's why I have to do this. For her. I will get her out of his home and I will protect her. I married a man who will ultimately destroy me and Hadley, unless I can get away first. Which is exactly what I plan to do.
Chapter 4. Connor. There's a lot of work we'll need to do if we want to sell it, I say as I grab the beer Declan brought to the table.
No shit. Declan shakes his head. At least the land is good. That's the real cash cow. Pun intended.
Sean smirks while raising his beer. Idiots. At least my brothers and I are all in agreement. None of us want the place, and all of us are ready to get out of Dodge. Then I think about the woman living next door. The one who I've dreamed of for 8 fucking years, who is now married and has a kid. I can't stay around here. I want to see her again, to find out if everything I created in my mind is true. Jacob leans back in his chair and points the bottle at me. His head is now shaved, thanks to the new role he was cast for. You're the only one who's a wild card, Connor.
Me?
Jacob is the closest in age to me. He and I also look the most alike. So many times people thought we were twins. He and I are both 6'2", have dark brown hair and green eyes. We're also both the biggest assholes in the group.
Yeah, you have nothing to go back to. No offense, kid.
I really hate that they still see me as the little brother who is gullible and needs these three asshats to protect him. They don't see that I'm a fucking Navy SEAL or that I've fought in a war, been shot at, shot people, and could destroy all of them if I wanted to.
I have plenty.
Sean shrugs.
You're getting out of the Navy, you have nowhere to live and no job. I mean, maybe you should take the farm until you get on your feet.
It's not a bad idea,
Declan the traitor says.
The fuck it's not.
That would completely destroy my plan of getting out of this fucking town. Too many memories that I've worked so hard to forget have been rearing their ugly heads since I've been back. All we're saying is that it might give you something to have for a bit. We all know you're the handiest of us, Jacob tries to explain. We all agree there's a ton of work that needs to be done. It makes sense. What about his leg, though?
I huff and then chug my beer before answering. I'm full of anger and disgust that they'd suggest I stay in this house.
Each time one of my brothers went off to live their life, my father grew worse. He drank more, punched harder, and I hated everything in this town a bit more. My good times were almost non-existent. The only memory I have that I hold on to is the night with my angel. But, like all angels, she doesn't belong here any more than I do. She is meant for more, and that more sure as fuck isn't some broken ex-SEAL who has been dreaming of a married woman. She had told me she wanted to fly, which was why we never even told each other our names. She clearly didn't fly far, though. In fact, she got married and had a kid less than a year after our night together. Clearly, I held on to that memory far stronger than she did.
His leg is fine, he's healed, just not fit enough for duty.
Declan tacks on.
No, not fit for duty and definitely not staying here.
Yo, are you listening?
Sean jabs me.
Not to you, idiots.
He releases a heavy sigh, looking away.
Jacob has a point. The farm needs work, you need a life, and all of us have things on our plates.
Oh, so I'm just the one with nothing else to do.
Pretty much, Declan responds.
Now I remember why I hate being around the three of them.
I'm not staying in this town.
Declan puts his beer down and turns to face me.
Why?
He's dead. He can't hurt you. No, but something else could. The possibility of more.
Then why don't you want to be here?
I challenge.
We both know why, and it has nothing to do with our father.
It's a beautiful blonde who stood at my father's grave and then left before he could even speak to her.
Fuck off, Connor.
You fuck off, Deck. You want me to be here dealing with it all when you're unwilling to do the same damn thing?
Once we sell the farm, none of us have to ever be here again.
Sean tries to mediate the situation.
It makes sense, Connor. If you stay, you can work on cleaning up the farm. You have no plans. While Jacob has to get back to Hollywood, Declan needs to get back to New York, and I'm in the middle of spring training and have to return to Tampa to meet with the team.
If I weren't so angry that they were making sense, I would keep fighting. But they're right. I have nothing to rush back to once I sign my discharge papers. Let's sell it and get whatever we can, I suggest. Sean shakes his head.
No, this is all we get, and there's no way the four of us should unload it for the sake of unloading it. Not when one of us has time and is more than capable of getting it to the point where we can make double. We're not talking chump change, Connor. We're talking about millions.
I groan and rub the back of my neck.
I'm not agreeing to this.
Declan shrugs as though he has not a care in the world.
I'm not worried. He'll see that we're right.
Or a bunch of assholes.
Sean grins.
We already know that.
We meet with the lawyer tomorrow. Declan's voice is firm and authoritative, which makes me want to punch him in the throat.
After that, we'll decide what we're doing.
For now, let's let Connor stew while we all drink. I flip them off, hating that my brothers think they know me so well. Joke's on them because my mind isn't completely on the farm. A small part of it is on the woman and her little girl next door.
What the fuck do you mean there's a stipulation?
Declan's voice rises even louder as he stares at the lawyer. The short, pudgy lawyer dabs at his bald head with a handkerchief. I love it when my brothers and I make people sweat.
It is very clear. Basically, the will states that in order for his children, Declan, Sean, Jacob, and Connor, to inherit the Arrowwood farm, they must each live there for a period of 6 months. Once that time has been fulfilled by each of his children, whether it's all at once or successional, then they will become the full owners with the authority to sell.
Sean laughs without any humor.
Motherfucking asshole is controlling us from the grave. This is bullshit. There has to be a loophole.
Declan says as he gets to his feet, his anger is palpable. The lawyer shakes his head.
I'm afraid not. He was very specific. If you all fail to agree, the farm will be sold and the proceeds will be donated to the foundation to help prevent child abuse.
You're fucking kidding me,
I say before I can stop myself.
The man who beat all four of his children regularly wants to donate a possible $10 million to prevent what he inflicted on his own kids?
Jacob puts his hand on my arm.
He will not win.
He wins no matter what!
I scream.
If we live on that godforsaken farm, we're doing his bidding. If we all walk away, then all the money that we are owed, and don't tell me we're not owed anything after the hell that man put us through, goes to charity.
I can't think straight. Anger and revulsion pulses through me with each beat of my heart. Of all the things I expected when we walked into this office, being dealt a fucked up ultimatum wasn't one of them. I didn't think I'd be forced to live in the one place I never wanted to return to for 6 months.
He thinks we won't stay.
One of my brothers pipes up.
I'm not staying. Not now, not this way. I refuse to do this. Hell, give it to charity, because those kids might actually have a chance that we didn't.
Sean stands and starts to pace.
What happens if one brother refuses?
The lawyer clears his throat.
Then you all lose it.
I throw my hands up, wanting to punch something, and then hate myself for even the thought of it. I have never raised my fists in anger. I fought, sure, but it was in self-defense or because I had no choice. The vow the four of us made means everything to me, and I will never hurt another person physically because I can't control myself.
How long do we have to decide?
Declan asks, the ever-responsible one who has no doubt formed a plan on how to handle this.
3 days to decide, and someone has to be in the house within 30.
He states, matter-of-factly. Declan stands, and the rest of us follow.
We'll see you in 3 days with a decision.
Chapter 5. Ellie.
I'm hungry, Kevin slurs from the couch. Make me something.
I close my eyes, willing myself not to mouth back at him. It only makes it worse. I have to bide my time, be smart, and keep him as even-tempered as I can.
Sure, is there anything you'd like in particular?
He glares at me, his anger already starting to grow.
Food, Ellie. I want food.
My throat goes dry, and I stand, forcing a smile that I hope will appease him. Once I get into the kitchen, I see Hadley at the table working on her homework.
Hi, sweetheart.
Hi, Mommy.
I crouch next to her, pushing her brown hair, which is the same color as mine, back. I want you to go play outside or stay in your room, okay? Her green eyes assess me, weighing what no 7-year-old should ever have to think about.
Is Daddy angry again?
I nod. He is. So I want you to stay out of his sight, okay? Disappointment flashes across her face, and I feel it in my soul. I'm letting her down. I'm failing my daughter in every way. If my mother and father were alive to see me, they'd weep. I'm not the girl they raised me to be, but I'm trying.
Okay, Mommy, I won't bother him.
When did I become this woman? When did I decide that it was okay for a man to treat me so? Was it when I married him? hoping I could love him enough to change him? Was it because my parents were killed the week before the wedding and I was desperate for security? Was it when I found out I was pregnant a month after our marriage? Is this my punishment for lying for years about Hadley, suspecting that she isn't Kevin's daughter? The wave of guilt is so intense that I worry I'll drown in it. Before Connor reappeared a week ago, it was an easy decision. I was married to Kevin. I wanted Hadley to be our child because, in some part of my heart, I loved him and believed it was God's way of forgiving me for that. I thought that if we had a baby, it would be okay. He would change because of this beautiful life that was growing inside me. And for a while, he did. It was as though the guy I started dating in college was back. He was kinder, more attentive, and I had so much hope brimming inside me I couldn't breathe. But a leopard doesn't change its spots. The man, who I saw only glimpses of in the beginning, stopped hiding years ago, and I am going to be strong enough to get away. Hadley packs up her things and then heads to the back door. Can I see if Connor is home? I can't take much more. No, honey. Connor is a grown-up and he'll probably be busy. He said I could go to the treehouse any time. I'm not sure what treehouse she's talking about, but she seems very excited by this. Hadley, you hurt your arm a week ago. You can't be running around like that. It doesn't hurt and I won't climb it. I don't believe her. But at the same time, I can't keep arguing with her or Kevin will get mad. Damn it. Okay, where is this treehouse? She smiles. On his land. I guess I asked for that. She's too smart for her own good. I look at my little girl just a little closer. Her eyes are the same color as his. I've always thought that she had Kevin's face and that her eyes must have been like someone in my family or his. But when I saw him, saw his eyes, it was as if the universe were reminding me that I never really knew. Hadley could be Connor's. Hadley presses her hands to my cheeks. I like Connor. He was strong and carried me. Plus, he didn't yell when he found me like I thought he would. No, he didn't yell like her father would have. Hadley, how did you hurt your arm? The whole story, sweetheart. You won't be in any trouble as long as you tell the truth. She looks away. A deep breath escaping her lips. I fell. I wasn't supposed to be out by the barn. I told Daddy I wouldn't climb up into the loft, but I wanted to see what the cows were doing. I went up there, and when I heard Daddy, I knew I would be in big trouble, and I didn't want to make him mad again. So I jumped out, but fell on my arm and then ran. I knew he'd be upset. He's always mad. I fight back the tears and give her a small smile. I'm sorry. It's okay. I know he's tired. And an asshole, and selfish, and mean, and angry at the world, and taking it all out on me. Instead of telling what feels like my only friend, who absolutely should never hear it, I bob my head. Why don't you run out back? She gets up from the table and slips out back to the tree outside. Sitting under the branches of the oak tree, in the shade while little rays of light fall around her, is one of her favorite places. She looks so peaceful there, as though the ugly parts of the world haven't yet tarnished her youth. I've tried, Lord knows I have, to give her normalcy and love, but when it comes to Kevin, it's given only when he deems we've earned it. I wonder what it would have been like had I not been drowning in grief. Would I have found someone else? Would I have not married Kevin? Would Hadley and I be on another farm? With another man who carried her when she was scared? No, I can't do this. I can't go down a road that isn't open to me. I shake my head and focus on getting Kevin food so my reality doesn't become a nightmare again. I carefully make sure that I'm adding the right things and ensure I don't put too much mayonnaise on it. That set him off once. Ellie! Kevin bellows. I close my eyes, pray I did it right, and then grab the sandwich, chips, and a pickle sliced in quarters before heading back to the living room. Here, honey, I say with soft lightness to my voice. I've learned that the sweeter I approach him, the less venom he spits back. If you'd like something else.
This is fine.
I release a heavy sigh internally and then sit beside him. Maybe today won't be bad, and we'll pass the time like most days. Kevin isn't always mean. which is what kept me completely complacent for a while. It started gradually, leaving me wondering if I was imagining things. Then it was like a snowball, finding strength and growing in size the longer it rolled, until it got so large that it crushed anyone in its path. Most of all, me. It's days like this that are the scariest, when I'm unsure if I'm going to have the husband I once wanted, or the man who haunts my dreams. Do I talk? Do I wait? I walk on eggshells, afraid of choosing either one. Kevin takes a bite, and I steel myself, hoping I step the right way. I saw the barn door is repaired. He grunts. It looks great.
It took me hours to get it to hang correctly. My uncle was an idiot who didn't know his ass from his elbow. He didn't use the right hinges, so I'm surprised it didn't fall sooner.
His uncle and aunt were wonderful people who he inherited the farm from after they passed. Without them, we would have even less than we have now. Not that this is what I ever wanted. I had dreams, ones that included me living back in upstate New York, working on a vineyard. That's why I was attending Penn State for business. But then everything changed. My parents were killed right around the time Kevin inherited the farm, and here I am. I'm grateful for the farm, though. It gives us income and stability. Not to mention it's fully paid off, so we didn't inherit any debt with it. Of course, I don't see a penny of what we make, because Kevin has disallowed me access to anything. I have no idea how wealthy or poor we are. It's another way for him to control me. But I have my own income now. Kevin has no idea that I'm being paid as a full-time teacher. He believes I'm volunteering, and I need to keep it that way. About 6 months ago, I opened a bank account in Hadley's name. I'm glad you fixed it, though. I'm sure it'll help with keeping the equipment safe. Kevin nods.
Especially now that old man Arrowwood is dead. I heard his asshole sons are back. It's all the farmhands could talk about. Like I pay them to gossip all day.
I'm sure that was frustrating. You deal with the workers so much better than I ever could. I go for empathy and flattery. The more I let him think I'm on his side, the more likely it is that his temper will hold. He drops his sandwich and drains the glass sitting beside him. Then he turns to me, his eyes boring into mine, and I see that it didn't work.
Are you mocking me?
Kevin, stop. You're looking for something that isn't there. His jaw clenches.
I'm tired of feeling judged by everyone.
I'm not judging you. I'm complimenting you. There's a difference. I don't want to fight today, so please don't turn this into one. I've never been more grateful that Hadley was outside. If this escalates, at least she won't see it. The thing is, Kevin is always careful of where he strikes, careful not to leave marks where people will see them. And there are always marks, even if they're not visible on the outside. He only makes mistakes when he's too drunk to care, and that isn't this time. Kevin's eyes close, and I start to speak again. I was being kind, and I know you don't believe me, but it's true. You're my husband.